Well, crap. I didn't want to start the recording over the phone, but... Let's see.
Well, you just recorded that.
Yeah! That's okay.
Hello! Welcome to the Dungeons & Dragons podcast.
Yes, Demented Dungeons and Dragons, where we talk about everything but Dungeons and Dragons. Okay, well, I guess I'm able to log on with the console after we log on and after I activate the deal. I'm on the website, too, so I can control everything from the computer now. So this is like another trial podcast, if you will.
All right. Very well. So do we have any guests that we're expecting?
Not yet. Just you and me.
Yes, you and me. Well,
so far.
Let's run the Ron Paul.
All righty. I wonder if I could do that on a computer.
Curious. Meanwhile, I'm looking at OregonLive.com, boning up on the Hammond controversy, which has led to what Ron Paul's going to talk about, or has talked about. We're a little slow.
Right on. All right, well, I'll worry about figuring out what to do with the computer. Here we go. You ready?
Sure.
Sure.
Okay.
Weekly update for Monday, January 11th. The nation's attention turned to Oregon this week when a group calling itself Citizens for Constitutional Freedom seized control of part of a federal wildlife refuge. The citizens were protesting the harsh sentences given to members of the Hammond ranching family. The Hammonds were accused of allowing fires set on their property to spread onto federal land. The Hammonds were prosecuted under a federal terrorism statute. This may seem odd, but many prosecutors are stretching the definition of terrorism in order to, as was in this case, apply the mandatory minimum sentence or otherwise to violate the defendant's constitutional rights. The first judge to hear the case refused to grant the government's sentencing request, saying his conscience was shocked by the thought of applying the mandatory minimums to the Hammonds. Fortunately for the government, it was able to appeal the decision to another judge whose conscience was not shocked by draconian sentences. Sadly, but not surprisingly, some progressives who normally support civil liberties has called for the government to use deadly force to end the occupation of the refuge. These progressives are the mirror image of conservatives who properly attack gun control and the Patriot Act as tyrannical, yet support the use of the police state tactics against unpopular groups such as the Muslims. Even some libertarians have joined the attacks on the ranchers. These libertarians say ranchers like the Hammonds are corporate welfare queens because they graze their cattle on federal land. However, since the federal government is the largest landholder in many western states, the ranchers may not have other viable options. As the Oregon standoff shows, ranchers hardly have the same type of cozy relationship with the government that is enjoyed by true corporate welfare queens like the military-industrial complex and big banks. Many ranchers actually want control of federally held lands returned to the states or sold to private owners. Situations like the one in Oregon could become commonplace as the continued failure of Keynesian economics and militaristic foreign policy is used to justify expanding government power. These new power grabs will increase the threat to our personal and economic security. The resulting chaos will cause many more Americans to resist government policies, with some even turning to violence, while the burden of government regulations and taxes will lead to a growing black market. The government will respond by becoming even more authoritarian, which will lead to further unrest. Fortunately, we still have time to reverse course. The Internet makes it easier than ever to spark the ideas of liberty and grow the liberty movement. Spreading the truth and making sure we can care for ourselves and our families in the event of an economic collapse must be our priorities. We must help more progressives understand that allowing the government to run the economy not only leads to authoritarianism, it impoverishes the lower classes and enriches the elites. We must also show conservatives that militarism abroad inevitably leads to tyranny at home. We also need to continue exposing how the Federal Reserve feeds the welfare warfare state while increasing economic instability and income inequality. This week's Senate vote on audit the Fed is a major step forward in our effort to let the American people learn the full truth about our monetary system. One thing my years in Washington taught me is that most politicians are followers, not leaders. Therefore, we should not waste time and resources trying to educate politicians. Politicians will not support individual liberty and limited government unless and until they are forced to do so by the people. Thanks for calling this update. A new update is placed on this number, 888-322-141.
To repeat the announcement, press 1.
Okay. You still there? Hello, come in. Well, that's weird. The system says David's still online, but David's not still online.
My apologies. I muted there so that my noises wouldn't stand over Ron Paul, and I forgot about that.
Ding darn diddly. I was like, wait a minute. Your number dropped off the bottom, but it stayed on the top within this whole website console thingy. So I was like, okay, he's still there, but basically it's saying active speakers below. So if someone mutes themselves, it will take them off to an active speaker.
Ah, well, I muted myself with my phone.
All right, yeah.
Not by keystrokes, but yeah.
Okay, so okay. It's picking up background, whether or not there is any background noise or not. And it's saying who's actively having background noise and who's actively not. So it's pretty cool.
Well, I actively shut off all background noise because I didn't want to interrupt Ron Paul.
Yeah. Me too.
Use of deadly force is authorized? Excuse me?
Right.
Yeah. Who's the terrorist?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know. People get mad at me when I call Department of Highway Robbery terrorists, but, you know, they're the crackers. You know what? A lot of people, I don't know if black people know this. I mean, some do, obviously. But most white people don't know this. Whenever, you know, a black person calls a white person a cracker, they think that it's because we're white like crackers. And what it boils down to is back in the slave days, the guy who had the whip, it didn't matter what color he was, black, white, red, yellow, the guy carrying the whip was called the cracker. So when the slave beater was coming, the slaves would run and warn all the other slaves saying, cracker, 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 cracker. And that's how they identified or notified everybody to be on their best behavior because the cracker was coming. He wasn't always white, but that was his name because he carried the whip. So basically, cracker means slave enforcement officer. So all these cops who are not serving the people, they're serving the New World Order, are crackers. They're the slave enforcement officers.
Yay.
Yeah. But I wanted to mostly focus on the positive side of what Ron Paul said, and that was basically, you know, spreading the message of liberty and prepping, if you will. You know, survivalism. Getting off the grid. I think he mentioned getting off the grid last week. Or maybe it was the week before. I can't remember. But he said something about getting off the grid a week or so ago. And now he's talking about something similar. You know, getting prepared. And that's what we need to start, you know, focusing on as a nation. Like our DD&D project. Our off-grid organic hippie farm.
Well, leave it to me to observe the negative.
Who, you? Oh, well.
Yeah, I caught that native big time.
Well, I did too. But, I mean, you know, we got to give people hope. And so that's why, I mean, we can focus on the negative, but we need to also focus on the positive. So that's where I wanted to go with it, so that we have a good, positive introduction. Not to say anything about you and where you took it, because I'm all there. You know, I'm with you. But yeah, prepping, survivalism, getting off the grid, you know, supporting your family, supporting your community. We talked about that a little bit on our last podcast.
Well, I tell you what, they'll probably bring in people that are from outside the area to do that. But one of the positive things you can do in your area is to get to know your local sheriff and whatever, and, you know, kind of feel him out and see to what degree he's accepting of your oddities, you know. Because when the shit hits the fan, it might be good to have them on your side because they know you.
Right, yeah, we want the local authorities to be part of the team. We don't want them to be part of the... We want to be part of the solution, not part of the problem.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, they'd be hard-pressed to send the sheriff in to go get the Hammonds if the sheriff knew the Hammonds weren't doing anything wrong.
Well, and the sheriff was probably friends with them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're going to send in an outsider. That's why a lot of the highway patrolmen are not locals. A lot of the highway patrolmen are from somewhere else, and they ship you in because they don't want you to be friendly with locals.
Yeah. Yep.
I learned that from my from Mary, because her brother was trying to get into law enforcement. But yeah. Anyway, so and freaking, you know, they're bringing in foreigners. They're training foreigners on U.S. soil. To basically combat us. So it's like we're overseas right now fighting the locals because the local law enforcement isn't going to do anything because the locals' law enforcement are with the locals.
Which is what they should be.
Well, yeah. So the New World Order has to bring in foreigners like us to keep order for the New World Order, because the locals are like, no, you guys aren't right. You guys are messing with our progress and everything else. You know, we're not going to be your slaves. And so that's basically what's going to happen to us. And so we got to prepare for that. We got to, you know, bear arms. Don't let them take our arms. We need to come together as communities and learn how to take care of and support one another. Physically, emotionally, spiritually, and I forgot the third and fourth one. Mental, physical, spiritual, and emotional. Mental, emotional, physical, and spiritually. So, you know, yeah, coming together as a community. Taking care of your people here in our homeland.
There you go.
Yes. Taking care of our people. And our people aren't red, yellow, black, or white. They're all of the above.
Yeah, I think somebody recently told me we're all pink on the inside.
Something like that. We're all descendants of Noah, so no matter what race we are, we're all the same family.
Yes, we all came off the boat.
Yes. But that's the way I see it, you know. So it's like, I mean, we talked about foreigners last week, you know, coming here legally, illegally, whatever, getting special privileges, whatever. Legally or illegally, you and I pretty much somewhat agree with that. I don't necessarily like illegals, but I also understand your point of view on the fact that they're not really illegal because this earth belongs to all of us. And, you know, I'm somewhere, yeah, well, I'm somewhere in the middle between where you are and where a lot of the other countrymen are with, you know, illegals. You know, like this North American Union thing, I used to be all for the concept of the North American Union before the North American Union even was in existence. You know, I had my own concept that, you know, there shouldn't be any borders. We should be able to cross freely and everything else. We'd have a lot less problems if we could go to Mexico and Mexicans could come up here and whatever, you know. There was no border. I thought, you know, that would be great. But then after I found out how the New World Order has arranged the North American Union, well, I was against that. Then I was for putting the borders up because I don't like the way that they designed erasing the borders. So, yeah, I think, you know, like the Native Americans have believed for many moons that this isn't even our land. This is God's land. It doesn't belong to us. We're just using it, and we need to respect it. And so there should be no borders because it doesn't belong to us. We don't have the right to put up borders. But we also don't have the right to control the people like the New World Order's been doing.
Now, that doesn't mean that we don't have the right not to defend ourselves.
Well, no.
You know, and... But it just needs to be done differently than it's been being done, you know. And I don't know, I think a lot of the fears people have about, oh, these strange people come over and they'll just take over everything. It's like a lot of that's manipulation by the powers that be, you know.
Well, yeah, and that's how we got here, though. We came over and took over everything and took it from the Native Americans, pretty much. But not just us, the government.
Well, yeah, the Europeans in general, they were doped about the Native Americans. They were told, oh, there are a bunch of savages over there. You got to look out because they'll kill you. And so that caused a lot of conflict right from the start. You know,
right.
Vibe comes along and see somebody sitting in the middle of their garden, which was a forest as far as the Europeans was concerned, and went to approach them to see what was going on and got shot for it because the poor guy in the cabin he built in the middle of the woods was afraid of the natives because he was told they were a bunch of savages, you know? And
right, kind of like the Middle Easterns were brainwashed or were told here in the U.S. that they're a bunch of savages.
Yeah.
That they're all terrorists.
Right, and who goes over there and acts like a bunch of savages?
Right, we go over there and act like a bunch of savages, right.
So,
yeah, I mean, I don't care that they come here necessarily, but, you know, like Lenny was saying last week, they shouldn't have any special privileges. They should have the same rights as everybody else.
Right. Yeah. Right. No nobility. No, what's the term I'm looking for? I can't think of it.
Well, it's equal rights. We all should have the same rights.
Yeah.
And I agree that that should be globally, but I also agree that we shouldn't have a new world order enforcing those rights because they're actually not enforcing those rights.
Well, yeah, the only ones that can enforce your rights actually is you.
Correct.
You can't even hire a lawyer to enforce your rights. There's things a lawyer cannot do in the courtroom that only you, representing yourself, can do. Only you can stand up and for your rights in the courtroom. That lawyer really can't.
Well, the lawyer works for the system, so they have to abide by the system rules, or you don't.
There's that, too. There's that, too. But, I mean, there's certain legal actions that only can be done by the person who is doing them. And the lawyer can't do them for that person. If you hire a lawyer, you've already gotten rid of those actions.
Right. Not to mention that we're the sovereign, and therefore the system's supposed to work for us, but they don't want us to believe that. But as long as we understand that and we know that the system works for us and it's not supposed to work against us, we have an opportunity to resolve the problem. We just have to figure it out. But anyway, so prepping and getting off the grid and surviving all of this garbage, you know, hope, you know. Obama was supposed to be the hope and the change, and all he did is give us, Obama's not really the problem, but, you know, we're worse off now than before Obama. So, you know, where's the hope? Where's the change? You know, the people need to come together and start working together as a community, as a nationwide community and a world, global community to get rid of the problems and focus on the solutions.
Well, the biggest solution is stop looking to people outside your area. Look to your neighbor. Look to yourself for your solution. You know, don't expect some big master, you know, thousands of miles away to take care of your problems. He doesn't care about your problems. He really doesn't.
No.
And his overlord doesn't care either.
What?
His overlord doesn't care either, and you don't even know who his overlord is. Yeah.
Right.
You know. You think he's the most powerful man in the country when you vote for a president, and he's just a puppet.
Well, yeah, I mean, okay, the big thing right now is Star Wars. Everybody's getting into Star Wars, and I'm finally watching the first three episodes that are not really the first three episodes. They're the second three episodes, but nonetheless. And they're talking about basically how everybody relied upon this New World Order that was supposed to be working for the people, by the people, this democracy. And I just now figured it out in the second movie. I had to watch the first one twice because I fell asleep during the first one twice. But anyways.
Didn't see that much. I'm sorry. I interrupted your chain of thought.
Because of their naivete, whatever the word is, they allowed this one guy to manipulate himself into power. And, you know, because they were depending on the system. And this one guy basically worked his way into controlling the entire system. And I just figured out that was the Dark Lord, who eventually ended up taking Darth Vader on as his whatever. But I haven't got that far yet. I just started finally putting together the puzzle. But the public, you know, we're relying on the New World Order, the UN, the Republic, to have democracy and or global democracy and world peace and all this stuff that we should already have. And, you know, the people in power that are controlling everything, they don't really care about that. They just care about control. All they care about is keeping themselves in position and keeping themselves in power.
Right.
And eventually, one person is going to... Huh?
That pays them better.
Yeah, well, you know, eventually that one person is going to work their way into power, just like the Bible says, the Antichrist will work his way into power and have total global domination. And we're too stupid to see that.
Right.
We as a people. The human race. Yeah. Which reminds me of another subject. We were talking about racism earlier. I wanted to touch on that a little bit. It's okay to be racist.
Yeah. Might be stupid, but it's okay.
Well, our concept of being racist is, you know, we basically don't date outside of our race.
That's true. The human race. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
But I had a debate with a guy earlier about the whole sexist thing. Because even though we don't date dudes, it doesn't make us sexists.
Darn. Because I like that statement. I'm sexist. I only date girls.
Right. And we're racist. We don't date outside the human race.
There you go.
But anyways, yeah. I don't understand racism. You know, the New World Order uses that to keep us divided. You know, we're all the same people. We're all earthlings. We're all the same race. And we need to realize that, because until we do, we're divided. And what has this nation said for many moons? United we stand, divided we fall.
Right.
And we're not united anymore. We need to get united.
I don't really pay attention to the news anymore, but I hear people saying, did you hear about this? Did you hear about that? Did you hear about the other? And just about every single time it's, you know, they want the people that they're complaining about to be your enemy, i.e., they want you to think of them as the, you know, to separate yourself from those other people. But what you need to do is you need to get to know those other people.
Yeah, anybody that you see on TV that the media is bad-mouthing, those are the enemy of the New World Order, so they need to be our friends.
They might not necessarily be the enemy of the New World Order. They just a face, a figure put out there for us to be scared of. You know?
Okay, let me rephrase that. The New World Order is the enemy of those that they are portraying on TV that they want us to be afraid of. So we need to befriend them.
Need to at least find out who they are on our own, you know.
Right.
Well, okay, the latest one I heard is that there is an Islamic mosque in every county in the United States. And I looked at the guy square in the eyes and I said, really? There's one right here in Cedar County? And he was dumbfounded for a second. He just, Well, I guess so. I go, well, where is it? I want to go visit it.
Yeah, I doubt there's one in every county, but I'm sure there's one in every state.
Well, yeah. But, you know, go visit one. I bet you'd be surprised. Other than the fact that they say that Christ is just a real good...
He was a prophet, not the prophet.
Yeah, he was a real good prophet, according to that. You know?
Right.
He wasn't the one and only Son of God. As a matter of fact, one guy I was discussing is like, what in the world would God need a son for? And that's all right. I turned that one on his head. As far as I'm concerned, we're all sons of God. So,
true that.
Ooh. I'm going to get beat down by all my Christian friends now.
Well, that's what I was taught in church, that we're all children of God.
Yeah. Yep. And Jesus is my brother.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know that he was or was not the Messiah, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Nor do I know that Muhammad was the Messiah or whatever, blah, blah, blah. Every religion has their Messiah, and they're all different. Well, for the most part. But, I don't know, it's kind of like this one videos that I found. It's like, you know, all these religions all over the world, everybody was born into these religions, and they follow pretty much the religion that they were born in. And every religion has their Messiah, and every religion believes that they have the one true religion, and every religion believes that all the other religions are false religions. How did we get so lucky to be born into the right religion?
Woo-hoo!
Yeah, we won the lottery. You know, how do we know without doing our homework?
Yeah, they don't really like it when you start doing your homework.
No. Mary, my ex, she went to church with one of her Baptist friends. And the Baptist preacher zeroed in on her right away because she was a newbie, you know. And so after church, he came over and started talking to her and everything, and basically was trying to recruit her, basically. And she, we had a practice. We went to like 3 or 4 different churches. We went to a Unity church. We went to an RLDS church. We went to a Holiness church. And well, actually, they all had the same God, but they practiced different practices. And I think there was another, but I can't remember exactly right off the top of my head. But anyway, so she said this to him, and he goes, oh, that's church hopping. That's blasphemy.
Say what?
That's why I don't go to bed. He says, that's church hopping. That's blasphemous.
Right. I guess Jesus was pretty blasphemous because he went from temple to temple.
Right? Yeah, they don't like it when you go outside of the church to explore religion for yourself and do your own homework. They want you to be brainwashed, just like the New World Order.
Yeah.
So if a church encourages you to look and explore outside the box, then you're probably at the right church.
You found another Tarian church.
Probably, yeah. The other Tarians.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't wait to put up our TP church. We already got 2 poles. We just need how many more? I think there's a total of...
I think we only got 1 pole. I think that other pole is for something else.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're collecting poles as we cut fence line. So if we got a nice, tall, straight, sturdy tree that's skinny and it's in the way, we're not just chopping it up into firewood. We are trimming the limbs off of it. And if anybody knows how to, please tell us how to properly prepare such a pole so it doesn't rot on us. But in the meantime, we got it up on top of one of the containers drying. So.
Yeah. I'm Googling how many poles does it take to build a teepee, and it's giving me everything.
I bet you can do it with three.
Huh?
I bet you can do it with three, but I bet you 20 would make it rounder.
All right, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, according to this.
Cool.
Oh, yeah, there it says 12. Use 3 for the support, the main support. And then start laying the rest of them up there.
So 3 of them... You only need 3 of them to be heavy.
Yes.
And the rest of them could be lightweight.
Correct.
So we find 3 good heavy poles, and then we go buy some really long pieces of PVC pipe.
That might work.
There you go.
Yeah. Teepee cloth needs to be, let's see here, 6, oh no, that's the, oh, 12 foot. But it's like a, that's the diameter, not the diameter.
Radius?
Radius, half of a diameter.
Yeah, the radius.
Okay. Yeah, the radius needs to be 12 foot. And basically it's a half of a pie that you're making.
Man, we're chasing a lot of rabbit holes tonight.
Yeah, well, the concept is getting out the grid, survivalism, and prepping. So,
right.
Teepees, building a teepee is part of that subject. You know, if you can living in a teepee. But our teepee is going to be a church.
I'm not so much interested in, to be honest, you know, if I want to state it accurately, I'm not so interested in getting off the grid as I am in replacing the grid with alternatives.
True. But we got to start somewhere. The city,
right.
The county, all those people aren't going to do it. We got to do it as individuals. And really, that's the way it should work, is we need to do it as individuals.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you know,
so
I want to make my own electricity. Okay, I'm sorry. We're going to talk over each other, aren't we?
Go ahead.
All right. So, you know, like, I want to make my own electricity, pump my own water out of the ground, you know, eventually produce my own natural gas or whatever, you know. Wow, I can't remember anything tonight. I forget what that's called. Basically, make your own biodigester and get your own gas that way. I've got a friend who's into wood gasification. He uses char gas to run engines, you know, so that's very clean and efficient and actually, you know, good on the engine. So, as opposed to wood gas, which can tear your engine up. But, you know, there's all these alternative ways of doing what everybody else does, and it doesn't require a centralized source. You know, I'd even want to replace the communication system, you know, go back to CB radios or something, you know.
Mesh networking.
Yeah, mesh networking. where, you know, your computers are tied together via radio waves and phone lines. And, you know, I know the phone lines are a centralized system, but, you know, there's nothing to say we can't eventually run our own.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, but part of that is you got to get to know your neighbors, you know, so you can't just sit in a cabin in the woods and be all by yourself and not know anybody and not interact with anybody. You've got to get to know each other because, you know, one guy's going to be better at this than you are and you're going to be better at something else than he is. And so you help get each other sorted out and taken care of and you know, saving money basically, not even needing money if you do it right. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, you figure out how to do something and you do it. Then you go to your neighbor and you teach him how to do it. And you teach them how to teach the neighbor, their neighbor, how to do it. And we're all just passing on the education to each other, and we're broadening our capabilities and abilities to support ourselves and support our neighbors.
Yep.
And those who are less fortunate, you know, that's where the more fortunate come in and help the less fortunate be self-sustainable.
Yeah, the lot of fear that people have about getting off the grid and being self-sufficient is we live in a nation of people who haven't been doing that for a long time. So it's the past not known is
two generations, basically.
Only two?
Well, maybe longer, but I mean, three generations ago, my grandparents and great-grandparents, you know, that's pretty much how they lived. But then again, my grandparents and great-grandparents were farmers. So they pretty much lived off the grid. They may have had utilities, but everything else was off the grid. They had their own water. I think the only thing that they really paid for was, you know, gas and electric. They pretty much provided everything else. They canned their own food. They did everything. They had their cellars. I remember going into the cellars and seeing all the food that they had canned and stuff like that. And they, you know, whatever. I mean, they had everything they needed there. The only thing they paid for it was gas and electric. That was when I was little. But my parents were not raised that way, nor was I. I'm the first, I think, of my generation to actually go back to, you know, to start going back to that. And I've been wanting to do it since high school. So for 20 years, I've been looking at doing it. Now I'm just now finally doing it.
Yep, yep.
So I must be psychic or something. Psycho. I'm psycho or something. But yeah, so... at least two generations ago, people were still doing it. And some people still are today, it's just, but most people aren't. Most people are citified. Most people are conformed.
Yep.
And I am too, for the most part, you know. Well, you and I both. I mean, you were raised more farm than I was. You know, you're familiar with the canning and stuff like that. A lot of things that I'm not.
I had to teach myself canning. I'm not terribly good at it. I mean, I'd appreciate somebody, you know, helping me out in that.
That's why we need to find girlfriends who are capable of such things. So they can learn us how to do these things. So they're not the handicapped ones. We are.
Yes, I need a I need a girlfriend who's really good at gardening.
Gardening, canning.
Yeah, I'm good at foraging, but I'm not good at gardening. So I can find the free food.
We got a friend who's really good at, so she's got a really good green thumb. If we get our grid going good enough, maybe she'll bring her daughter down and she can help us be more productive on the land too. Because she's definitely an off-gridder. You know who I'm talking about, right?
Off the top of my head, no.
Trying to come up with a nickname. Oh, well. She's a mutual friend.
Yeah, all right. We'll
Gemini.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, my gardening friend up in Independence.
Yes. She'd be great for the project. You know, we get our community set up, or, you know, get everything set up where her and her daughter would have a place to live. She would definitely be a valuable asset to our project if she would be interested in doing it. But when I talked to her about what we were planning on doing, what, 2 years ago, she was all like, woohoo! You know, she thought it was an awesome idea, so we just got to get it going. We get it going, we get some like-minded people. Whether they're potential mates or not, we'll get more like-minded people coming to the area. I may have a potential mate. I don't know. She's been out in the country. I don't know what her skills are. She seems to be compatible astrologically and business-wise, but I don't know about the rest. But yeah, getting off the grid or replacing the grid. Yeah, we definitely don't want to be like the Amish.
No, I've seen them up close. A lot of them seem kind of hypocritical to me. I mean, it's like they won't own their own car, but it's perfectly fine for them to big steal whatever a ride.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking more like no utilities. We don't want to be like that.
Well, no. You know, yeah, we want to do our own utilities. You know, in that respect, I can agree with them, but they refuse to do some utilities. You know.
Well, except for like the ones where they're they got stores like. In the stores, they got to produce, they're producing power to basically keep their refrigeration going. They're using gas generators and other things. They're not using electricity. They got this thing against using electricity. What's those, plates that we were talking about putting in the ground that creates electricity.
Well, basically every metal has a potential voltage difference between every other metal. All right. So your typical carbon cell battery has copper and now, I can't remember what the other metal is it uses. But, like copper and silver. Copper and silver has approximately 1.5 volt difference between them when you put them in a solution. And so the electrons flow from one to the other. All right? And if you put a wire between them and put a light bulb in that wire, you can potentially light up a light bulb if you do enough pieces of metal in your solution, right? Well, you take those same metals and you stick them in the dirt and then pour some water on the dirt. Then your ground will act as the electrolyte, and it's a thing called an earth battery. And so you get yourself a 1-inch or 1/2-inch sheet of copper, you know, thick, big, nice big plate of it, you know, maybe a foot wide by 3 or 4 feet long, and you stick that in the ground, and you put a steel one nearby, and there's going to be a voltage difference between the two, and it's a constant source of voltage until eventually the plates wear out. And they will eventually wear out, but it'll take a long time. You know, so as long as you keep the ground moist there, you've got a perpetual battery, basically.
Okay, so basically every time it rains, you're not having a drought, you're creating electricity.
Yeah, yep.
So that's another opportunity for a power supply. So, you know, we could set up solar panels, wind generators, earth batteries, create our own plasma generators. I still want to experiment with this, but I've seen these people, let's see, what is it, Keshi Plasma Generators.
You're talking about your solution you put into a battery and it produces perpetual electricity?
Yeah. Here it is. I've been watching these YouTubes on Keshi's plasma generator. Plasma reactor generator. Okay, so basically these people are using soda bottles, whether it's 1 liter or 2 liter, they're using soda bottles. They put this solution in the soda bottles and in these wires, and then they run the wires to, they run these wires to a tester, and the tester's actually, you know, it tests the voltage of this homemade battery with a soda bottle.
Right?
Yeah, voltmeter. So, sorry, I don't have all the terminology memorized.
That's all right. I'm still doing that myself tonight, so don't feel bad.
Yeah, I mean, I know the concepts, but I'm not good with the terminologies. So they take the soda bottle, they put the solution in the soda bottle. I don't remember the solution, but I have it written down. And I've also been, documenting all of these videos and other literature and resources. But they take the solution, they put it in a soda bottle and have these electrodes going, or wires or pins that are inside the soda bottle to connect, you know, the metal. Basically, they're running the metal into the solution through the bottle, and then connect the voltmeter to the metal on the outside of the bottles.
Okay.
And they actually will continue slowly, but they continue to increase in voltage. You know, not at like a super rate, but they're slowly continuing to increase the voltage. If they can do this in a water bottle or a soda bottle, my
now,
theory
what are the
is...
leads made out of?
Pardon?
What are the leads made out of?
That I don't recall, but we can continue. You can do your own homework on this. But let's see here. This video here, they probably tell, because this is very... extensive explanation in their information section, but you know, we can use copper or silver, probably anything really, but I think batteries are using lead. Right? Is it lead that batteries use, regular batteries?
Car batteries use lead. Yeah, I'm not sure what the other metal is, but to be honest, I'm not even sure there is another metal, but it seems to me there has to be.
My theory is, and this is what I want to test run, and other people can maybe test run this too if we don't get a chance to do it before they do. Take some used car batteries, some old car batteries, you know, recycle the battery acid or whatever, and put the solution in the battery and test it out and see if we can have our own batteries that are generating electricity. Now, my theory is, okay, it's fine and dandy. It's generating electricity. But, hang on. There's the trailer, Coal City Cobb trailer, and I'm checking to see if it's mine. It looks like it is mine. So maybe they got done with my trailer early. Anyways, what was I going to say? Oh, basically, we get rid of the battery acid that's in the regular battery. Fill it up with the solution that requires for the plasma generator. Make our own plasma generators with car batteries, because it's a whole lot thicker plastic. It's going to be a whole lot more durable than a water bottle or a soda bottle. All right. Now, these plasma batteries are going to generate electricity. But if we're drawing electricity from them, they may not generate the electricity fast enough to supply the utilities that we need. But that's better than a battery that's just going to drain, right? So we put our solar power, our wind power, our earth batteries, we connect all of those to our plasma batteries. So now the plasma batteries are building and or maintaining the charge. They're not dying like regular batteries do. And then we're using, you know, when we're using the electricity, the other things are also contributing to our power pack and keeping our batteries fresh. So at night, when there's no sun and it's not been raining and there's no wind, or maybe very little wind, the plasma generators, or the plasma batteries, are maintaining their charge. They're not dying. So that's my concept. So I want to give that a test. That's one of the first projects I want to do when we got some extra money. Make our own plasma batteries. Yeah, I mean, if anybody listens to this, we don't have any callers yet, but if anybody's listening to this later, that is something worth giving a shot if somebody wants to give it a try, you know.
Yeah, give us a shot.
Give us a shot, like my pickup truck says. But, yeah, get on the internet, learn how to do your own plasma keshi. Plasma generator. There's tons of stuff on YouTube. People are actually showing you how to do it, and they're showing you the results right there on a video. So we can create our own plasma generators, plasma batteries, because basically that's what they said. They're more like batteries than they are generators, but they don't decrease in power. They increase in power, unless, of course, you're using them. But when you stop using them, they're going to increase in power again. They're not going to just die. You don't got to worry about putting them on a charger. They'll charge themselves.
That's actually a different theory than your typical chemical battery. So
right.
I'd be curious to see how that works.
Well, yeah, because the only time the typical battery will actually recharge itself is if it's in a cold environment. And it only will recharge itself a certain amount. it won't actually recharge itself fully like this does. So that's the nice thing, you know. I mean, yeah, you can put it on a charger, charge it faster, but if you don't have one handy, it'll automatically charge itself. So if you don't have a windmill and you don't have a solar panel and you don't have earth batteries, but you got these, you still got power, free electricity, practically free electricity. Because, I mean, the ingredients are, like, simple ingredients. I remember, like, one was, like, lemon juice. And one, you know, that was one of the ingredients. There's, like, five different ingredients. But, you know, simple, cheap ingredients that you can get and make your own solution. And so if you don't have all these other amenities, at least you have that. And that's a good start to have, you know, TV, radio, lights. Maybe not TV, but lights and radio. So, I mean, if you do want to keep in touch with what's going on around you, you'd have the radio. But at least you'd have the lights. You know, you'd have power so you could see at night. Until you get enough money saved up for solar panels or windmills.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but you get enough plasma batteries, you won't need any of that stuff because you'll have so much power you wouldn't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
You just got to get the old batteries, and people hold on to their batteries for the cores, or they trade them in for the cores. But, you know, start offering people a couple extra bucks, you know, for their cores. Say, hey, I'm interested in buying, don't turn your battery into O'Reilly's or whoever. You know, I want to buy it. If I'll give you a little extra if you want a little extra, but I want to buy your battery when it's bad.
Well, yeah, I mean, people gather up their copper and they sell it to the local metal recycler. Really, you should take it and melt it down and make a giant plate out of it and get yourself an iron plate the same size or some other metal, you know, just iron is easier to come by, and cram them into the ground and hook wires up, boom, measure the voltage across them, you know.
That's it. Yeah, I need to learn how to do that, too, earth batteries.
You know, and copper is melted at a relatively low temperature, so it'd be easy to make your own copper plates. Iron plates, they're expensive, but cheap enough.
Well, yeah, iron plates, you can come by those fairly easy. But copper plates, yeah, I don't know where you'd buy a copper plate. But yeah, here's our homemade earth battery video right here. They've got, they're using copper and metal bolts and screws.
Quick video to show you how to make one of these earth batteries. That's everything you need right there. Just the copper wire.
Copper wire.
Galvanized bolts.
Galvanized bolts.
Ice cube tray and some dirt.
They're using an ice cube tray, dirt, wires, and galvanized bolts.
Woohoo! Oh, galvanized. He's using
I guess that way the metal won't break down as fast. But shoot, maybe we can make our own earth battery. Build a greenhouse, because like you said, it needs moisture. Although this guy doesn't look like he's using moisture. Okay, without moisture, he's getting 5 volts off of it just by wiring all the bolts together, putting them in dirt, putting each bolt in each ice cube section of the ice cube tray in dirt and wiring all of them together with copper wire. Just that alone, he's getting almost 5 volts off of it.
There you go. Well, yeah. But how many amps is he getting? That's the question.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, you want watts. You want watt hours, you know.
True. But, I mean, this is just a simple...
All right, the first thing we want to do is go ahead and...
Ice cube tray one. I mean, we build something bigger, we're going to get more power off of it. But that's a good start. But see, he's not putting any water or any moisture in it. So maybe if he puts the moisture in it, it would increase the voltage.
Yeah, it could potentially lower it, though, because if you dilute the electrolytes too much, there wouldn't be any transfer going back and forth. But, yeah, I think the more moisture, the better. I'm just speculating. There's a possibility it might not be the best thing to do.
Right on.
The wire. You
want
to make the pieces about...
All right, I'm going to skip the demonstration.
And that won't work at all in dry soil.
Yeah, dry, he's getting almost 5 volts off of it.
Dry, or?
Yeah, it's
or
just dry.
You should run anything that has an LCD screen, like a calculator, pedometer, digital watch.
That I find a little hard to believe. But,
see if
okay.
More than enough power to light the screen. And there it is, lighting a blue LED.
So but this is a little ice cube tray that's generating its own 5 volts. You know, you do it on a bigger scale, it's going to create more voltage, you know? I'm asking you, not YouTube.
Say it again?
I said, this guy's using just a little ice cube tray. You know, with little bolts and little wires, and he's getting 5 volts off of it. So you do it on a
yeah.
bigger scale, you're going to get more voltage off of it, no?
He's using dry dirt to do that?
Dry dirt.
No, I don't believe it. I'd have to see. Are you sure it's dry? You sure it's not just crumbly? There has to be some moisture.
I watched him pour it through a funnel, and it was powder.
Powder.
Powder dirt.
Wow.
So just powder alone, he's getting 5 volts. Here's a guy who's doing it on a bigger scale. Home size power plant. He's using a zinc pipe, an iron pipe.
Well, I have to experiment with that because I can't believe it's working with dry.
Yeah, this guy buried a zinc pole and an iron pole with insulation between the two of them. And it's getting low voltage, but it's getting a very high amperage. So, but even that low voltage would still charge your battery over time.
Well, the house is back to the 40s and 50s. And I've got an iron pipe here, an old iron pipe. These two working together with a little bit of an insulator produce very high voltage under load up.
Oh, no, he said high voltage. Hang on. Oh, it's a half a volt per cell and 30 milliamps per cell. So zinc and iron is this guy's solution. He says, and he's burying them in the ground and using that as his earth battery. So that's where your moisture concept would come in.
Right.
Telluric currents.
What current?
I'll send you the YouTube link. But yeah, and I'll put it on our podcast whenever I upload it. So yeah, this YouTube link will be in our podcast for how to create an earth battery. All you need is two poles, a zinc pole and an iron pole, and some insulation, and you're good. High voltage.
Yeah.
Hook those up to your plasma batteries. You won't need a windmill. You won't need
a solar. The bigger the piece of metal you use, the bigger the pieces of metal you use, the more amperage you'll get out of it. And
there you go.
If you put them relatively close to each other, you'll get more amperage that way too.
So where are we going to build our earth batteries?
Yeah, my only question is, will there be any environmental damage as a result? Because, like, if you use copper, copper I'm familiar with. He's using other metals. You're going to get oxides of that metal into the soil when you do it. So I'm kind of curious, you know?
Right, since we're also farming, producing our own food and utilities, that's another thing you're going to look at, too, is...
Well, okay, let me ask you, what metals is he using?
Zinc and iron. He's using the old...
So what plants do you need a lot of zinc?
I'm not sure. But I do know that... I've known this for probably about 20 years. If your garden, you know, flowers alone, but your fruits and vegetables too... Flowers, for example, if your flowers, you know, you plant flowers and they have just a normal dull color, throw some nails in there or some kind of metal in your dirt, and it'll actually add color to your flowers. It'll give them more life. And
the answer is we plant our hydrangeas around the earth battery.
There you go.
And they will be the most vibrant hydrangeas you've ever seen.
Or maybe even our yarrow.
Yeah, I don't know. Does yarrow take up zinc? You know, that's what he's using. He uses zinc and iron. Copper and silver I'm familiar with. I know that that's 1.5. It's 1.5. Same as your typical batteries are actually 1.4. But, you know, a lot of people think they're a volt and a half. But, I mean, if you take an old dime and an old penny and put them together, that's 1.5 volts. If you do a stack of them alternating, it's however many times your stack is tall.
That's if you're using a real copper penny. So that's another reason to save copper pennies.
I think they'll actually work with the new copper pennies, too, because there's a little bit of copper in them. I'm not sure about the new dime.
The coins are made out of zinc, aren't they? Well, anyway, you might be able to take a stack of copper and non-copper pennies and make your own batteries.
Yeah, well, you can. It's just whatever metal you're using will determine the voltage. All right?
Right.
And so even if the dimes don't have silver in them, it is a different metal than what's in the penny. And so you can make a battery out of it. It's just not a very big battery. And you don't know what the voltage is going to be. It might be more than 1.5 volts. It might be less. You know. And you might need a whole bunch of them to get enough amperage for what you want to power. But, yeah, that and, well, a simple experiment is use a lemon or a potato. People do it with potatoes. You stick two different pieces of metal in the potato and then put your leads across it, and you got voltage. So.
Right, so the potato is acting as the insulator. Kind of like... kind of like the earth battery,
you know,
where the earth is acting as the insulator.
Yeah, it's not acting as an insulator. It's acting as the electrolyte.
Or the, yeah, okay. Well, the two batteries aren't touching each other, though, so it's also acting as an insulator. I mean, not the batteries, but the two metals are not touching each other. Because that's what I understand. You don't want the metals touching each other. You want them to be separated with some sort of insulator, no? Well, I don't know. With that ice cube tray one, he had the two metals touching each other, and then he had them in the dirt, and the dirt was the insulator. The electrolyte. But his was dry dirt, so it was more like an insulator.
Right.
So the two metals touching each other created the 5 volts. And dirt acted as an insulator, but if he added moisture to it, then it would have acted as what you call it? The potato was acting as?
As the electrolyte. Basically, there's ions inside the potato, inside the fluids that are inside the potato. Or the tomato, or the lemon. Lemons are great because they have lots of acid in them. And that's an electrolyte, right?
Well, yeah, lime alone is a battery. You can stick an LED in a lime, and it'll power the LED for like 3 days.
Yeah, I think that's because the LED's leads, I think they're two different metals. And that's why you're able to get that effect.
Oh. They didn't tell you that. Well, it didn't work with the lime, though. It only worked it didn't work with the lemon. It only works with the lime. So I don't know. Who knows? But yeah, alternative power. So there's 4 ideas right there. 2 of them which you can create your own power cheaply without having to go buy solar panels and or windmills. And actually, windmills we can make ourselves too. Old alternators. You know, get a cheap alternator get a used alternator out of the junkyard, stick it on a pole, and or whatever, slap some blades on it or the wind will turn it and wire it up to your battery. All you got to do is, I guess, keep water off of it. So build some sort of housing around it to keep, you know, water off of it. And there's another cheap way to create a battery charger. Solar panels are fairly inexpensive. We can go to Missouri Wind and Solar or other places.
Yeah, Missouri Wind and Solar will sell you a better thing than an alternator. But, yeah, take a car alternator, makes you a good generator from what I understand.
Yeah.
So
now you need a charge controller so that you don't overcharge the batteries.
Yeah. Yeah, there's something you need specifically for charging with wind, though. I can't remember what it is, but... I know you should put, with solar panels, you should put a diode to control the flow of electricity. Because the solar panel will actually drain your batteries at night if you if the sun's not hitting it.
Yeah, and I think the charge controllers have that built in.
Yeah, except the one you gave me apparently didn't.
Well, the one that I gave you also drains the battery itself because it runs, it's got digital meters and stuff on it.
Right. Yeah, which should have been minimum, but oh well.
Oh well. Yeah, I'm not sure. That was a Harbor Freight thing anyways, and I don't really trust
yeah.
Harbor Freight stuff.
Harbor Freight, my favorite place to go buy junky equipment.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't necessarily trust them. I mean, I'm very selective on what I buy from
them. I don't trust them at all. One of my friends accurately states it. You go to Harbor Freight and you buy a POS.
A POS, piece of shenanigans.
But it's a cheap POS. And
it'll
at least get you started. It'll get you started. And you'll learn things. Like what I learned from your junkie. And it's not your fault. No, I would have made the same mistake if you hadn't.
Well, actually, I bought those off David Irish, who got them at discount from somewhere else. So I actually got them half price through David
yeah.
Irish, and I only got them because Jeff wanted them.
And they've served him well for a long time.
Yep. And then I did all the work, and he took all the credit. I did all the work,
yeah.
And he took all the credit, and they ripped me off.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll
when you listen to this podcast, he's going to be coming on you for slander.
No, it's the truth.
Not really, because it's not really slander, but...
No. Yeah, he's an idiot. Anyways... yeah. So, solar power, earth batteries, plasma batteries, and wind power. The wind power you can make yourselves, the earth batteries you can make yourselves, the solar panels you can make yourselves, but... Oh, sorry, that was... my alien friend here trying to put in his two cents. But anyways, I've been watching too much Star Wars lately.
Jabba the Hutt?
No, well, almost sounded like him, didn't it? But, yeah, solar panels we can make ourselves too, but it's a little harder. Not really, but it's a little more complicated. But, yeah, so that's a good start. Growing your own food.
Yeah,
food
to learn how to do.
Yeah.
I've short-circuited that one because I've learned how to forage. But I would really, really, really like to learn how to grow veggies more efficiently. So
I've
done a few things like squash and things like that, but I mean, I need to be able to do the full-on garden and have enough veggies to feed a family from that.
Well, foraging isn't really a half-bad subject anyways. Turtle Lake Refuge, that's probably 90%, 95% of what they live on. They've got, I don't know how many acres, but all of their food, or 99, 95, maybe even 90% of their food, is wild edibles. They just go out and pick it. And, oh, no, they do grow some stuff indoors. They do grow their own sprouts and whatnot. They do buy things like avocados because avocados don't grow in California. I mean, not California, Colorado.
Yeah, same difference, right?
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, for the most part, most of their food and medicine, for that matter, are wild edibles. So we don't really need to grow our own food. God's already growing it for us. We just need to learn how to identify it. But
this is
growing
our
own food.
That's where our vegetables originally came from. But,
yeah.
You know.
But growing
like,
our
like,
own food
you know,
will help supplement that.
Well, to be honest, if I really made a career of it, I could go out and feed myself right now. I still remember enough I could go find stuff to eat. But this time of year, it's difficult to find, you know, thistles and things like that, unless you know what the stock looks like that was on it when the top was alive, you know? So.
Right.
But, yeah, there's stuff out there to eat. You just have to dig it up this time of year. And you might want to do a little digging ahead because, like, Sunday it's supposed to drop down to 8 degrees. That ground's going to be frozen hard. You're going to need a pickaxe to dig anything up.
True. Well, yeah, and that's for growing things indoors. Having a greenhouse will come in handy, too. I think the winter is probably the main time. Winter would be the main time people would want to grow their own food. Because, well, you know, if they don't can it in the summer or in spring, summer, and fall, they'll want to grow food indoors through the winter. Yeah, there's all kinds of resources online and whatnot for learning how to grow your own food and medicine and forage for your own for free food and medicine. Which Marcus Rothkranz is one of the people that we follow that teaches people how to forage and identify different things and how to buy and prepare things in the grocery store if you can't find it or grow it yourself. You know, what to buy, how to prepare it in order for it to be, you know, healthy, delicious, and nutritious. And his book that I want to get, I still haven't gotten, is called Free Food and Medicine.
Yeah.
Food and Medicine. Of course, I bought the .net. And redirected it to his affiliate program. So if somebody wants to give us commission for that, they can go to freefoodandmedicine.net. But you can also go to freefoodandmedicine.com if you want to bypass me and just go straight to his website. I mean, I don't care if I get the commission or not. The commission is just a bonus. But I want people to be healthy. And so Free Food and Medicine, you can Google it. You can go to the .com, which he owns, or you can go to the .net, which we own. And, you know, he offers all kinds of solutions. He's got DVDs. He's got books. And then he's got free YouTubes that you can watch all day long. And that's pretty much what I've been doing. I've been, you know, watching the YouTubes. But I still want to buy his books, and I still want to buy his DVDs. I just haven't done it yet. But
well,
yeah, he's got a lot.
You realize we've gone past our hour.
Oh, yeah,
again.
We always go past our hour. I just don't want to go to 3 hours again.
Yeah,
that's why
we're talking about.
That's why we're talking about food and medicine now before we close.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so Marcus Rothkranz, that's one area where you can learn how to grow your own food, forage for your own food. We'll be also putting stuff on our website, daviddavidanddavid.com, periodically. And I also do foraging and exploring videos on my YouTube. So you can go to, look for Kano Trump on YouTube, or do a YouTube search for foraging and exploring, and you'll find my YouTubes where, you know, David Ray and I will be teaching you foraging, and whoever else, you know, that we may come across while we're doing videos that has some education, we'll be throwing that in there too. But yeah, foraging, growing your own food, that's a very vital part of being sustainable, whether just sustainable within your household or sustainable within your community. And, you know, ideally we want to be able to produce 3 times as much food and utilities as we need. And in that way, we have enough left over for others that are in need. So
I don't really see that being hard to do.
No, not really. That's the whole concept. People who have the ability, have the power, whatever, to create 3 times what they need in food and utilities. It's our duty to, you know, help the community. Now, people who are not less fortunate, who have money, then yeah, sell the food and utilities to them. But the people that don't have resources and people that don't have money, those are the people that need our help. So those of us who can do it, you know, that's what we're here for, to help our neighbors who can't. Yeah, I love Marcus Rothkranz. I love his website. I love his videos. I'm also working on a non... Go ahead.
We'll have to get 2 copies of his book.
Well, I want to get more than 2 copies because I want to help educate people. And other books. There's other people out there doing, you know, making books that are similar. You had a book that was...
I have a wonderful book. I wish I could remember its title, but it breaks down what's available by season and by terrain. And, you know, you just thumb through to whatever season you're dealing with, and there's always, always something all year round that's available to be eaten. But it also has this neat little feature where at the beginning of each section, at the end of each section, it tells you what else you're looking for, because you might not eat it at that time, but it'll be in flower at that time, so it'll be easy to spot. And so you get familiar with the plant, and then when the next season comes around, you know, maybe you're looking at things in early summer, late summer, something will be available, but it won't be flowering anymore, so you won't know what it looks like. But if you already found it in early summer, then later on you go, oh, yeah, I remember that. It had that pretty blue flower on it. Oh, look at this. Now it's got a nice edible tuber, or its leaves are more developed, and it's ready to be eaten, you know. It's a wonderful book. I wish I could remember the title. I'll tell you what, that's my assignment for next week. I'll have the title of that book.
There you go. But yeah, so and I have this nonprofit project that I'm doing, and it's going to be under freefoodandmedicine.org, and basically it is going to be where we who have the money and resources and whatnot to go out and get these books and start teaching people, homeless, the less fortunate, whatever, how to forage and find their own food, how to produce their own food, how to guerrilla gardening, and all that stuff. You know, come together as communities and teach our homeless, teach our less fortunate how to, you know, be self-sustainable so they don't have to worry about going out and depending on these food drives that are feeding them processed foods that are no good for them in the first place, mentally or physically, and go out and find, you know, fresh greens or grow their own, you know, fruits and vegetables and whatnot. If they're meat eaters, they'll still have to depend on the system to probably get their meats unless they eventually graduate to a level of, you know, producing their own meats as well. But yeah, that's my project there at freefoodandmedicine.org is basically like a not-for-profit project to bring people together and help learn people how to take care of themselves, support themselves, you know, because clothes, we can get clothes all day long for free. I mean, there's an abundance of clothes. Like thrift stores and whatnot, they have so many clothes to get rid of, they don't even know what to do with it all. You know, there's, you know, clothing is abundant in this country, but food is not. Food seems to be, well, at least healthy food, seems to be not so abundant. I mean, it is abundant.
We just have the people's choices.
Well, that's where I was going. People think they're, it's not abundant because they don't know what they're looking for. They don't know what they're looking at.
Yeah.
You know, the dandelions, for example, that's my favorite example. You know, on television you see these people, you know, advertising to kill your weeds, kill your dandelions. They're evil. You must kill them. Feed your yard with this product and kill your weeds, and the weeds are medicine and food.
The funny thing about that is dandelions are proof that your lawn is healthy. You should be proud of every yellow flower you see in your yard because it's saying how healthy your soil is.
True that. But yeah, dandelions, chicory. I don't really see chicory growing in people's yards too much unless it's commercial property.
Roadside edges and stuff like that.
Yeah. Dandelions are the big one. And the dandelions are the big one that people are trying to kill. And they need to be eating it.
It's
great
good for your liver. It's got more vitamin A than a carrot. You know? It brings nutrients from deep down in the earth all the way back up to the surface so that other things you plant do better. You know?
So the dandelion's feeding your yard better than that crap you're buying at the store.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we never hardly ever put fertilizer on our lawn in Independence. We never put any chemicals on it either. We just mowed it every 2 weeks. Yeah, let it grow up and then mow it. It was a little difficult in the back because the back was more moist and more thick. But leaves, you know, the leaves, we lived in a dead end. All the leaves in the neighborhood would blow into our carport every fall. Which
thank
was great.
You. Thank you, neighbors.
Yes, it was great.
I used to steal.
Winter,
I used to steal yard waste to get what you were getting for free.
Oh, I told all the other neighbors, "Hey, give me, you know, bring your leaves to me." You know, once you rake the leaves up, you know, they were in there. People put them in the paper bags. All my friends, I would say, hey, let me know when you rake up your leaves. I'll come and take your bags. And I'd take them and throw them in my yard. Throw them in my carport. The carport, it was at the highest point, well, one of the highest points of our yard. So after everything broke down and became nice black soil, in the spring and summer, it would, when it rained, all that nutrients would flow into the rest of the yard. We had one of the nicest yards in the neighborhood, except for the Asian people who lived down the street that turned their yard into a garden where they grew. Their whole freaking yard was nothing but food. It was pretty cool.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah.
And the yard Nazis didn't come and demand that they mow it down?
Oh, no, we didn't have yard Nazis. I mean, well, the Independents... ordinances didn't have any rules, regulations, standards, and guidelines against growing food in your front yard. But we also weren't part of one of those yard Nazi housing district thingies. What do they call those things?
Covenants and, I forget. I ended up having to look up ours. I had to find out who our community president was.
Yeah.
He was unelected because he went completely and totally unopposed. All he had to do was vote for himself.
Nice.
Because nobody knew who he was. And he was a Nazi telling everybody else how to keep their yard.
Right. Yeah, we didn't have that in Independence, not where we lived. But it was a great idea. You know, I kept trying to get Mary and the kids to help me do the same thing in our yard, but they didn't want to do it. We were growing food in the backyard, but it was mostly me growing food in the backyard. We had some growing in the front yard, too, but not much. And I had to basically plant things that took care of themselves because I couldn't depend on anybody to help me. But yeah, I admired the Asian family that lived down the street. Their entire yard, front to back, was nothing but food. You
and
know,
they're
every...
probably pretty vegetables, too.
Pardon?
They're probably very pretty vegetables, too.
I'm not sure what all they had. I know that they had... I didn't pay that close attention. I just paid close enough attention to notice that they had food from the front curb all the way to the house and in the backyard. The entire backyard was like vines. They had vines of food all over the place and everything. I mean, these people did not have to buy food. And they may have to buy a couple things, but they did not have to buy food. And how much does people spend a month in food? $200 easy, I'm sure.
You know me.
So, well, no. Me neither, really. But, I mean, $200 a month, that's $2,500 that you can
I actually did a pretty good job of feeding my kids on about $50 a month there toward the end.
Right. But, I mean, on average, that's what people spend, maybe. Maybe more than that. I don't know. Well, let's see what Google says. What is the average people spend on food per month? I'm willing to bet it's more than $200.
Well, yeah,
that's
I mean,
about right. The national average, according to statistics, well, I don't know. This website says 500 a month. One says 100 a month. One says 219 a month.
How
one
old are
says 170 a month. Something happened with our thingy. Oh, David dropped off. David has left the building. All right, so Americans spend $151 per week on food, $500 a month on food. Oh, on groceries. It doesn't say food. This one says $750 a month, or $770 a month. So we'll take the average between these averages. So we got, there's David.
Did I miss the podcast? Am I on time?
Yeah, so I'm going to take, oh, crap.
Something kicked me off the line. It said you hung up on me is what it said. I know you didn't, but.
That's weird.
Well.
So I'm going to take the averages. There's several different averages that these different websites have come up with. So, and this one here, $770 a month in food, that's high. I don't think people spend that on average on food.
It probably depends on what city you're in and when did they take the survey? That's what I was asking just before the phone disconnected. Because you're doing a Google search and some of those surveys you're looking at might be 10 years old. or even older.
2015.
Okay, so somebody's got their head up their rear end, probably 4 out of 5 of them.
Yeah. So I'm taking all of them, all of their averages. There's 4. So I'm going to divide that by 4. And the average between these 3 or 4 is $400 a month. Now,
so,
this
we're
going to
get truth by averaging lies.
Well, it may not be lies. This may be the statistics for their areas.
Okay. I accept that.
My guess was $200 a month. But some people like to freaking eat.
Hey,
yeah,
I do.
Some people, that's all they do. And, of course, they weigh 400 pounds. But...
Yeah.
Hang on. Times 12 divided by 52. Here's one that says $150 a week. So I'm going to add that plus 150 equals times 52 equals divided by 12. Why I screwed that up? There's no way it's $1,000 a month. All right.
You know,
so anyways.
You don't know how to do basic math. Oh, my God.
I know, right? Okay, hang on. Let me do it again. 150 plus 90 equals 240.
Yeah.
Oh, I know what I forgot to do. I forgot to divide that by 2.
Well,
that's
okay.
More screwed up. Divide that by 2. So it's about $120 a week, according to the 5 averages. Times 52 divided by 12. So this says about $520 a month. I still think that's high. Probably about $400 a month is what people spend on average in food.
Well,
maybe even less than that.
Even if they don't spend a whole lot of money on food, they're not going to get good food unless, to be honest, unless they grow it themselves or they do a lot of research on their local farmers. You're not going to get good food in the grocery store. It's not going to happen.
And true, and some of these averages may be based on people who buy organics and buy things from farmers markets and such, too.
Mm-hmm.
But...
Yeah,
they
have some strange place called Mama Jean's or Nature's Pantry. You might get some good food.
Right. So, all right, we'll take the low average of $200 a month. That's typically what I think or originally thought people would typically spend on food a month. So if you're taking a low average per month at $2,500 a year, $2,500 you can save in growing your own, turning your yard into a garden and growing your own food versus going out and buying it. Plus, like you said, it's a whole lot healthier than all this cardboard crap people are eating.
You got to keep in mind, people are going to say things like, I don't have enough time to do a garden. And my response to that is, it's really worth $1,000 a week to do a garden, you know, work half the time, get a job that doesn't pay as much, and grow your own food.
Well, that's what kids are for.
That's what kids are for. Yeah, you ain't going to eat anything if you're depending on your kids growing it for you. I'm sorry.
No, I know. Well, if you teach them right, they'll do it.
Well, no, actually, have them make up the salary. You send them out with lawnmowers and tell them bring back all the yard clippings. If they rake up leaves, bag them up and bring them home.
Right, and they get to keep the cash that they made from mowing people's yards, and then they get to turn around and turn that yard waste into topsoil for their own food.
Right, and when they want those $200 Nikes or $300 Nikes, say, well, that's why you're mowing lawns.
There you
buy
go.
Your own.
Go collect some more compost, and you can go buy your shoes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As long as you keep bringing
me
the compost, I'll feed you.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's part of the deal. I mean, but the whole family needs to be working together on that.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah.
Society doesn't teach children that anymore.
Well, my joke is you bring them in little slaves. So.
Yeah, society doesn't teach us to do that anymore. We need to get back to that. Yeah, well, we're raising kids to be basically dumb and dependent on the system, not self-sufficient.
Right. Yeah, I think my main message would be decentralize, decentralize, decentralize. If you absolutely need to have water, then you should be getting your water from a source that's not controlled by some centralized agency. If you need electricity, you should be getting your electricity from someplace that's not controlled by some centralized agency. I mean, and if it is centralized, it should be a very small community of centralization. You should be able to speak to everybody who is buying the electricity from the same source you are. So, I mean, maybe 100 houses off of the same service. In other words, it's a very small generation place. It shouldn't be Hoover Dam.
No.
It really shouldn't be Hoover Dam.
It should be Kano Dam.
Yeah, it should be Kano Dam. A little dam on the river, turning a little treadmill that generates enough electricity for the neighborhood. And honestly, that would have a lot less environmental damage. Your electricity would cost less because the overhead would be less. You know, ultimately you should be making your own electricity, but, you know, if you don't want to make your own, then at least you should be buying it from your neighbor, not from somebody you don't know.
Not some corporate greedy guru or politician who's supposed to be working for you, not the other way around.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, well, we're approaching our two-hour mark now, so you want to go ahead and close this?
Sure. How do we close it? We haven't said out, have we yet?
I don't know. Basically, you know, check out our podcast at Demented Dungeons and Dragons.com.
Yeah.
For David
for
and David.
So far, we don't talk about Dungeons and Dragons, but we talk about just about everything else.
We mostly talk about religion because everything is religion.
Hey, if I talk about Warhammer, would that count as Dungeons and Dragons?
Maybe. So maybe next time we'll talk about religion.
Ooh, okay. So we will be talking about Dungeons and Dragons.
Maybe. But I mean, well, basically what we talked about already today was religion, but we didn't talk about it as if it was a religion. So we'll talk about religion as in everything is religion.
Yeah.
And of course, whatever Ron Paul's talking about. Huh?
It's what you do. What you believe doesn't really matter. It's what you do. What you believe will affect what you do. But, you know, ultimately your religion is what you do.
Well, yeah, it's kind of like the Bible says, faith without works is nothing. So your works is a demonstration of what your faith is.
There you go.
Bada bing. All right. Well, we will adjourn till next week at 6:30-ish on Friday. But 6:30-ish,
yes.
6:30-ish. We'll be pushing the time back as the days get longer. So our podcast will be basically just after sunset every Friday. But right now it's 6:30-ish.
About an hour past sunset.
about an hour past sunset. But yeah, you can follow us on demitedDungeonsandDragons.com to see, you know, where our times are set, and also at DavidDavidAndDavid.com. I have a podcast section there to let people know when we're going to have our podcast, where to find us, where to go, and how to get there. So there you go, David, David, and David podcast, or DD&D podcast at DementedDungeonsAndDragons.com.
Yay! Shall we roll the dice?
Wah, wah. All right. I guess I could just hit the, I'm on a computer now, I could just hit turn conference off. Let's see if that works. Are you sure you want to drop all callers and disconnect this conference? Yes.
Yes.